Today is January 21st, 2008, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, episode number 113, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, morning editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, a sick Brian Chaffin, the editor-in-chief, and how you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing better than you, apparently. I lost my voice post-Macworld, but I have enough of it back to be able to record. You're the one that actually managed to catch the Macworld cooties.
I did, yeah. I've got a nasty cold, which is why we're coming to you so late. Jeff didn't have a voice yesterday, and I was in the process of getting sick. So here we are today, and we're going to have a slightly different format for this week's show.
Yes, we are. So instead of going through our usual routine of news and then context machine, we're just going to jump right in and talk about all the interesting and cool things that we found at Macworld Expo, and we'll throw in a little bit of CES just for good measure.
Yep, that makes us the Macworld and CES wrap-up show.
Oh, that sounds good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's almost like we planned it.
You know, yeah, people are going to think we know what we're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, woot.
And with that, we are jumping right into the context machine. Should we go chronologically and start with CES?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, yeah. I hate CES.
You know, Brian, don't hold back. How do you really feel?
I hate CES. No, that's not true. CES is a pretty cool show. Yeah, it is true. I do actually hate CES. The problem with CES in terms of the Mac Observer is simply that we're only interested in about 8-10% at the most of what's going on at the show. Yet it's like just the biggest ginormous monstrosity of a show ever.
Right.
So it makes it kind of hard. It's like there's way too much there for one person to do a good job of covering, but there's really not enough there to make it make any physical sense for us to send two people.
You know, maybe if they like ramped up the show, you know, hyped it up a little bit more and got some more content in there, maybe it'd be worth sending two people.
You know, CES basically is the Consumer Electronics Show. And it is not open to the public, which is a lot different from Macworld. So the only people that are there are, you know, OEMs, other manufacturers, retailers, media, and the vendors. And yet it's, you know, probably 4 or 5 times bigger, maybe even bigger than that, than Macworld.
You know, not having gone myself, does it have a different vibe on the floor since it's all people that are there as part of the industry and doesn't include outsiders?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a completely different vibe than Macworld. Macworld tends to be a lot friendlier than CES. And the CES is a lot more like going and buying a used car. I mean, it's just it feels like everybody's on the hustle.
You know, I'm picturing all these guys manning their booths with the white vinyl belts and matching shoes.
Yeah, indeed, maybe. But now there was one really cool thing that I saw come out of CES that I did feel like was worth talking, and that was Juke.
Yeah, I remember you mentioning that after you came across it, and it sounds really cool. But so I won't take your thunder. Wax poetic.
All right. Well, I'll actually keep it short. Actually, there's the wireless tower. We should probably talk about that too.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So, Juke. Juke is Zune done right, by which I mean it's a social and networking and music sharing platform that is not platform specific. Make sense?
That makes sense.
So I've got an iPod, I've got a Zune, I've got a Zen Creative, I've got a Walkman. And if I have a Juke device, I can share my music or share someone else's music with anyone else that has a Zook a Juke that is nearby.
Okay, so there you go. Zoom done right, because anyone can use it to share content.
Yeah, I mean, good luck finding someone that's got a Zoom.
Honestly, I don't know anyone that has a Zoom at all. Yeah,
to be fair, we don't really travel in those circles.
Yeah, but I watch for stuff like that, and I've never even seen a Zoom in the wild.
True. Yeah, well, they've only sold them, you know, a couple of million worldwide. And, you know, this way you could look for someone with the Juke-enabled headphones rather than looking for someone that's got your device, which means that this thing will work with iPod whether or not Apple helps them out.
Which is smart because, you know, if they have one MP3 player device that it isn't just selling well for, they have all the others to make up for it.
Right. And so the way it works is I've got a Juke pill that's somewhere on the headphones. This is basically your headphones would be Juke enabled. If it's glowing red, and I may be misremembering the colors here, but the principle is going to be the same. If it's glowing red, that means that I'm going to broadcast to you. You can choose to listen to whatever it is I'm broadcasting on your own Juke-enabled headphones and digital media device.
Okay, that's smart. So color code the headphones with a light.
Yeah, with a light. So that and it's a pill that's on the cord.
Okay.
Okay.
So it's easy to find people that have these headsets because you can look for the little glowing nubbin in the middle of their cord.
Yeah. And if it's green, that means I'm receiving. So, like, if I'm walking around with my green light on and you see me, you might choose the opportunity to play some song that you think is cool.
Okay.
Okay? But it gets better because you can tag the song with a click of a button that's on the pill. You can tag the song that you're listening to from me. When you get back to your computer, you get whatever meta information I had on that song, for instance, artist name, album, year, all that sort of MP3 metadata kind of thing, right? And as well as any profile that I might have chosen to include from one of the social networking sites, like MySpace or Facebook, et cetera.
Okay.
Make sense?
It does.
So if I'm broadcasting my songs and I said, and you know, I'm at MySpace/Space Cowboy or something ridiculous like that, which I'm not.
But now Space Cowboy is going to get tons of hits.
Yeah, probably.
Good job, Brian.
Yeah, you're welcome. Maybe it's actually Steve Miller that has that space. I kind of doubt it. Anyway. So you would get information about the song as well as whatever profile information I chose to embed. So if you want to broadcast anonymously or surf anonymously, you can. But if you're actually interested in possibly, you know, being able to meet folks that you've juked with, you can do that too.
Dude, people can now have juke parties and I'm doing air quotes, hook up.
Indeed. So the company that's doing it is Razer, the guys that make the gaming input devices.
I've actually reviewed one or two of their products over the years. They make a killer high resolution optical mouse.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. I mean, that's their whole thing. This is basically a subdivision of Creative. Razer.
Okay.
And they've got a lot of barriers to cross. They say they've got some OEMs that are interested, but you know, they're going to have to get a lot of these things out in the wild for there to be enough for it to ever matter.
Right. Yeah. If you have five people roaming around with these headsets, they might as well just have Zunes.
Exactly. Exactly. So another thing that they're doing is they're giving away their one city you can do. You can basically go to the Juke site. We should add something to that to the show notes.
I'll make sure it's there. That's what I do.
Where one city will get chosen to get 5,000 pairs of Jukes.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So, like, if San Francisco were to win, and you were living in San Francisco and you were to receive, do you actually receive two so that you could give one to your buddy?
That's really smart.
Yeah.
That's a really good way to do it.
Yeah, it's a nice little publicity thing that they're doing. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens with it. It's got some promise. I don't think it's guaranteed to be a smash hit, but it's definitely interesting.
Well, it sounds like a much better way to approach this whole social music thing than what Microsoft is doing, because this isn't limited to a specific company's product.
Yeah, I mean, it really wouldn't even make sense to have it be iPod only, even though Apple's got the market crushing market share.
Right. No, you're right. It's something that needs to be cross-platform in the mm-hmm. in the portable media player world.
Mm-hmm. It does. Now, there's one other thing that I saw at CES that I think was very exciting, and that's wireless power transmission.
You know, that just sounds so Star Trek.
It does, doesn't it? There were two implementations. One of them basically is a base pad that you put so you've got an iPod basically. I think basically the way they're implementing it right now is you would have an iPod case that had one of these receptor nodule thingies on the back of it. Place it on top of the platform. It gets charged. That's cool.
You know, that's really cool, but I'm going to set our Wayback Machine for a second.
Uh-huh.
Apple did this a long time ago. Do you remember the original clamshell iBook?
Yeah.
If you flip it over and look at the back of it, there's the little connector points right on the bottom just for that. So someone could make the wireless power stations so you could just set these in a little rack. So I guess where I'm going with that is this isn't brand new. Or a brand new idea, but I'm really glad to see that there's a more mainstream implementation coming.
Yeah, and these guys are looking to license out to any and all comers. So you could have one little base pad and have converters on your iPhone and your iPod and even your PowerBook.
You know, that would be so cool. I would love to be able to take my iPods and my MacBook Pro, whatever, just set them on my desk and have them charging.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But the other implementation, I think, is a little bit further out, but it's way cooler.
Okay.
And that's true wireless transmission. So what they're doing is they're beaming very, very low wattage through the airwaves.
Oh, no, that's really cool.
It's called PowerCast. Oh, the other company was called, I'm going to blame my cold. I'm going to have to look it up here on the website. Looking it up. Hopefully, if you're lucky, folks, we will have edited this delay out.
And in the meantime, just in case we don't,
All right, so Wild Charge was the base pad company. And PowerCast is the transmission company. So what PowerCast is doing is you've got what is effectively a base station. And, you know, maybe it's incorporated into your furniture or maybe it's incorporated into just a little pad. And when your device is coupled with it or devices that are coupled with it are close by, they'll get a charge.
You know, that's really cool.
It's way cool.
And I could see where putting one in a couch would totally make sense because your cell phone's in your pocket probably, and you have the remote control for your home theater system. So why not have them both charge while you're being a potato?
Sure. I think they were thinking more about desks. They said that they had some furniture company that was interested. I don't know if that's true, but it was a pretty interesting technology. I mean, it was introduced last year. And being shown in a more successful implementation this year.
Okay.
Why don't we move on to Macworld?
I think that sounds like a really good idea, especially since we're both in our funky haze and we're likely to meander around some.
So we've got, I guess, Apple's announcements up top, MacBook Air.
Right. And I'm going to start off by saying, woot. I would put more excitement into that, but I'm afraid that I would lose my voice before we complete the podcast. So it'll be a muted woot. And I think Apple has a potential winner on their hand with this.
Yes.
I think they got the form factor, the weight, the screen, the keyboard, the wireless stuff, all that. I think they got it right with this package. And and what I see is a long line of business travelers, students, and people that need a secondary computer lining up to snatch these little babies up.
Oh, I'd trade my MacBook Pro in for one of these in a heartbeat because I only use my MacBook Pro for covering, you know, trade shows and traveling.
Okay, so you are an absolutely perfect example of who this is a really good product for. Now, for me, since I only have a MacBook Pro, it doesn't make sense to get – well, okay, I can find lots of ways to justify getting one. But I already have a portable machine, and I'm not tethered to my desk with another machine. So it's a much better fit for you than it is for me. But I would certainly love to have one of these to take to expos.
Yeah, you wouldn't want one of these things as your only machine.
No.
That's basically the long and the short of what you're saying.
Exactly.
This is a traveler's machine. You know, yeah. It just doesn't have enough ports for most folks to use as an only machine.
Right. And, you know, for most Mac users, okay, maybe I should say for a lot of Mac users, the lack of a FireWire port is probably going to be an issue. But since you can daisy chain, what is it, 126 devices through USB, uh-huh. You do have a lot of potential expansion. But do you really want to carry around that many USB hubs to hook up that many devices?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, it's interesting. A lot of our readers were complaining, you know, that it didn't have this and didn't have that and didn't have this and didn't have that. It's like it's not supposed to.
Right. It's not supposed to. And that's the thing that a lot of people are totally missing. This has what it's supposed to have and nothing else. Mm-hmm. This is a perfect example of why Jonathan Ive makes so much money.
Exactly. It's competing in the ultralight category, and while there are a few ultralights that have an optical drive, most of them don't. And whilst many of the ultralights have more ports, you know, my guess is this will be fine with just the one USB port. I mean, again, it's got this very niche place in the market.
Yes, it does. And I think it's going to fill that niche place very well, especially because it can serve Mac users and Windows users equally because it has an Intel Core 2 Duo processor. It can run Windows as well as Mac OS X.
Right.
So this is like the perfect crossover gateway computer.
Well, really? You think so?
I do. I really do. Okay, here's why. All right, so we already have the iPhone and the iPod Touch, which have a multi-touch display, and they show people that aren't using a Mac already that Apple totally gets how to make a user interface. So then they decide, all right, well, I want to look at a Mac laptop. And maybe they already have another computer, and they're kind of a little bit leery about jumping in and buying a full-on Mac Pro Tower or MacBook Pro. They can look at this computer, the MacBook Air, which falls in that reasonable price range where, yes, it's a serious investment, but it's not like a $3,000 machine. And it has a touchpad that works like the iPod Touch or iPhone that they're already familiar with.
All right. So I got to disagree.
Cool. I like it when we do this.
I think that ultralights tend to go to a more computer sophisticated user in the first place.
Okay.
Okay. I think that those sophisticated users probably aren't – if they're road warriors, they're probably using software for the corporation that's Windows-specific.
Sure.
Okay. If they're not road warriors, I just don't think that would-be switchers are going to switch to that particular machine because of the lack of ports.
Sure, that could definitely be something that puts them off. And to jump to your side for a moment, you can buy a MacBook for less.
Exactly.
And it has more ports.
Exactly.
But, damn, that's a sexy little machine.
Oh, yeah, it's a sexy machine. I think that Apple's going to do well with it.
I think they are. And of course, now we'll just have to wait and see if it turns out that it does work, at least to some degree, as a gateway product or not.
Right. So tell us about the iPhone update.
Okay, the iPhone update. All right, first I have to say I really, really wish that there was more bandwidth in San Francisco when Macworld Expo is going on. It actually took me 2 nights to get that downloaded. But it's really cool, and it has a lot of great features that I really wish were there in the beginning. So, but I mean, the ability to find your location on the iPhone without having to use GPS, that was just like a killer thing for me, and I couldn't believe how stunningly fast and accurate it was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it found my location pretty much exact every single time I used it, which, by the way, turned out to be really handy in the evenings because there's so many after-hours events that we have to be at. So I was able to use my iPhone to figure out where I really was, where I needed to go, and what the fastest route to get there would be. And in one case, it showed me that I could actually walk to the location faster than waiting for a cab. You know, so that location feature in Google Maps on the iPhone was just absolutely wonderful. I mean, that was worth the price of admission right there. And then seeing that Apple turned on the other features so that we're ready when third-party apps can start happening, hopefully in February, you know, that was nice too. I was able to rearrange, move stuff around on the homepage. I really liked that. But, I mean, that locations thing, that was the biggie for me.
Yeah, the locations thing was definitely the niftiest toy. Being able to save stuff to the desktop, you know, make new icons, move stuff around, have different screens, that's all very good functionality. But the new feature-wise, the location thing was the big dog.
It was. And now another thing I was really glad to see, even though I don't use it very often, but I might start doing it now, being able to send SMS messages to multiple people at the same time.
Sure, that's a big deal for my wife.
Yeah, and I mean, it's huge for a lot of people.
For sure. Sure, a lot of people are, you know, live on their SMS messages.
Oh, right. And now the thing that I was disappointed with for SMS was that we still don't have the ability to attach pictures to the messages.
Yeah, that's really weird for Apple.
It is.
I mean, are you kidding me?
I was really surprised that we didn't get the multimedia messaging, just the group messaging.
Yeah.
And I was also really surprised that we didn't get to-dos.
Yeah.
And for me, that was actually a major disappointment because my to-do list is very critical to my life, and I still don't have that on my iPhone.
So, you know, speaking of to-dos, is on your to-do list to buy an iPod Touch?
Actually, I already have one.
Ah.
And the iPod Touch update, even though a lot of people are going, oh, they made us pay $20. Dude, totally worth it.
Well, it might be worth the $20, but I think what Apple's message here is that, you know, if you buy an iPod Touch now, we're going to screw you in the future too.
You know, maybe, but on the other hand, okay, so I'm going to take the other side of the fence on this one.
Okay.
Okay, so I think that because of the way Apple is accounting for the revenue from the iPod Touch, they were bound by law in the United States to charge for the update. Just, you know, with the
Nonsense.
iPhone, they're amortizing the price out. So, they're amortizing the money they get for the iPhone across that 2 year period. Therefore, they can say that they don't have to charge for the updates.
Okay, well, let's say for a second that there is some accounting rule that says they have to charge for this update. I don't think that's the case. I could be wrong. I could still be wrong. And I tell you
they've
what,
had to do it before.
This head cold is kicking my butt so hard that I almost don't know what I'm saying to begin with.
Good. I'll keep that in mind and take advantage of it.
Excellent.
Excellent.
But let's just make that a given. There's nothing in those accounting rules that it says it has to be $20. Make it $1.99.
Yes, but now what about the perceived value of the update?
Well, it comes free with new iPod Touches.
It absolutely does. You're right.
There's no price increase on the new iPod Touches. Now, if there was a price increase, if the darn thing were going to cost $20 more, you know, out of the box going forward, it would make a lot more sense for Apple to do this.
Right, right.
I think it's a bad message to send. I think this is going to hurt iPod Touch sales. What I think.
Now, my guess is that it won't hurt iPod Touch sales. And even though I took the other side of the fence on this one, just because, you know, it's fun to do this. I wish Apple hadn't charged for the update. My guess is that there's probably some way in the accounting to take into account giving this away, and it won't violate whatever magic rules that they had to use when they did their airport extreme update thing a while ago. You remember they had to charge people for the N upgrade to their airport cards,
right?
So my assumption was this was along the same lines, but even still, I would have preferred if Apple had said, "Hey, iPod Touch early adopters, here's our special present for you. All the apps that should have been there in the beginning," and then for everyone else, they say, "And if you're buying one today or tomorrow, hey, guess what? It's already installed on the units that are shipping."
Right.
That would have been the cool way to do it.
Right.
But I had to take the other side for a minute just because, well, I can't.
Fair enough. Let's move on to iTunes movie rentals.
iTunes movie rentals. You know, I'm thinking that Apple has found the sweet spot for this. And what I mean is they have the magic little mix of the iTunes Store, iTunes movie rentals, and the Apple TV. And so I think they found that magic point where people will now begin to feel comfortable purchasing these home media computer systems, because now you don't have to rely on a computer to use an Apple TV.
Yeah, yeah. I think that the movie rentals will be a success. I think that untethering the Apple TV from computers was a great move and that will also be a success.
I agree, and I think that had Apple untethered the Apple TV in the beginning, it probably would have done a little better right out the chute. But I think that this is the year that Apple will start to see more significant Apple TV sales.
Yep. Yep. You know, it's interesting. You remember John Key wrote a Devil's Advocate piece last week during
right.
Macworld about why Apple should buy TiVo.
Right.
And the Apple TV would become the ultimate set-top box if there were any DVR capabilities, especially if it was TiVo capabilities.
Right. And yeah, I mean, if Apple was going to snatch up a company to add DVR control to the Apple TV, it ought to be TiVo, because they're the people that figured out how to do it as close to right as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, on the other hand, though, I'd be very, very surprised if Apple ever added DVR capabilities to Apple TV, because that just doesn't fit in with the model of selling TV shows and selling and renting movies through the
True.
iTunes Store.
It takes the center of attention away from iTunes, or it makes iTunes no longer be the center of long-winded attention.
Right, right. And that's not what Apple's looking for in this product. So even though I would love to have an all-in-one, I'm also totally content having my TiVo separate, because my TiVo is what it is and it does what it does, and it does that job very, very well. Now my Apple TV can do its job. And when I say my Apple TV, I don't actually have one. So my pretend Apple TV can do its job and do it very well, and both companies can continue to innovate and make the part of the mix that they do even better.
Right, right. You know, something along these same lines that I was surprised not to see, especially after we got all of the movie studios on board with the movie rentals, and that was the addition of additional DRM-free labels at iTunes for music.
You know, I was kind of expecting an announcement, and then in the mix of everything else, the excitement that was happening, that slipped my mind. And It wasn't until we were talking about it earlier today that I realized, oh, crap, there were no DRM announcements.
To remind our listeners, in the weeks heading up to Macworld, all these labels were joining other music download services with DRM-free music.
Right. So it was kind of the anyone but Apple syndrome. And so we were expecting that they would, you know, they were kind of giving Apple a little slap and going to the other download services first, but then would say, okay, let's go ahead and do ours now and we can all roll it out at Macworld Expo.
Right.
And that didn't happen.
It did not happen. And I expected it to happen. And it's very interesting that it has continued not to happen.
You know, it's possible the reason it didn't happen is because Apple was more focused on getting everyone on board for movie rentals. And they totally blew my socks off when they announced pretty much all the studios.
Yeah, but you know, a lot of the movie studios that joined are some of the same corporate families of the music labels that have been joining other sites.
Right. So maybe this is just like the first step in this whole negotiation thing that Apple was doing with the parent companies, and they wanted to make sure that they really had the movie thing hammered out so they didn't launch with just like Fox or maybe. Fox and Disney.
Right. Now, I'm going to make a prediction that Apple is going to increase the number of days you have to watch a movie from 1 to 3 within the next 3 months.
You know, I hope that your prediction is right and it doesn't fall the same way that your Beatles predictions fall.
Because you know, go ahead.
I was going to say the 1 day thing, that's not going to work. Because, okay, so here's a scenario that doesn't impact me because I don't have kids. But there are people out there, believe it or not, that have kids. Let's say they start watching a movie in the evening and something happens and they have to put the kids to bed early. They get sick. They, you know, whatever. So they need to finish the movie the next day. Oops, they can't because it's expired by the time the kids get home from school and they don't get to finish it.
Yeah, and that's going to make some people unhappy and people are going to complain. It's a surprising limitation. It doesn't really seem all that realistic. I'm guessing that the movie studios asked for that limitation because it's not in Apple's best interest to have that limit be so short.
You're absolutely right. And I'm betting that was a stipulation that the movie studios had.
Yep. But hopefully if they're going to make any money off this, they're going to see that lengthening that amount of time will be beneficial to them. And I think that'll happen, and I think it will happen relatively quickly.
Right. I will agree with you on that. And I'm hoping that you didn't just give the chafing curse to the 3 day extension.
You know, I was talking to Andy Anatko, who the last line of his pre-keynote column for the Mac Observer was something about being nice to Paul and Ringo because they've come an awfully long way.
Yes. I remember reading that and chuckling and thinking, you know, I hope that didn't add to the curse.
Well, it might have. Well, it may have. And Andy and I were joking that, you know, we both very strongly suspected or expected a Beatle announcement to happen. And we were both very surprised that it did not.
I was surprised as well. I thought that this was going to be the Macworld where we finally get that announcement.
We finally get that darn announcement. Now, Andy had a really good point that, you know, it's taken so long that at this point when Apple does announce it, it's going to be, yeah, whatever, finally.
Yeah, that's a good point. Although, wouldn't it have been cool to have at least a couple Beatles up on stage?
Yeah.
Although it was neat to have Randy Newman up there because he's always fun.
Boy, I tell you what, that political song he sang was pulling no punches.
Oh, my God. That was something else. Okay. So for those of you that didn't get to go to the keynote and haven't watched the video of the keynote yet,
or read our coverage,
and haven't seen our coverage, come out from under your rock, and you have got to see Randy Newman at the end singing his song about the current state of political affairs in the United States.
Yeah, his basic premise for the song was that as bad as the Bush administration is, they're nothing compared to Stalin and Hitler and the Caesars.
Yeah, and he even used those names specifically so that we knew exactly what he meant.
Yeah, there was no doubting what he meant. And I don't know why my audio is messing up, folks. I just don't know. There's no reason in the world my audio should be messing up as much as it is, and I apologize. I'm going to have to get someone in here that knows more than I do to help me find the problem.
Well, you know, maybe after you recover from your Macworld cooties, you'll sit back down at your computer and go, well, crap, that's it right there.
Well, we don't need to get into it. It's pretty straightforward. It shouldn't be this much of a problem. Look, we should talk about one more thing before we let folks go, and that's the Editor's Choice Awards.
Yes, we really need to talk about that, which, by the way, I'm so glad that we're doing Editor's Choice Awards because it gives us a great way to really recognize companies that are going above and beyond.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We gave out 12 Editor's Choice Awards to 11 different companies.
We did. And so, I mean, to run down the list real quickly, Ambrosia Software for Wiretap Studio, Apple for Logic Studio and the MacBook Air, Elgato for the Turbo 264, Nova Media for Phone to Phone, the Omni Group for OmniFocus, iFi Inc. for the iFi, Audio Engine for the AW1, Data Robotics for the Drobo, Smile on My Mac Software for PDF Pen Pro, Adobe for Photoshop, Elements 6 for the Mac, and FileMaker for Bento.
Yep. Your favorite?
My favorite? Oh, man. Actually, it's a tough one for me. I'm actually torn between Bento, Photoshop Elements 6, PDF Pen Pro, and OmniFocus. How's that for being torn?
That is pretty torn. You know, going through this decision-making process, there were 8 of us, contributing editors and editors of the Mac Observer, and Dave Hamilton, our president. And
right.
It was a very fun process, but it was a lot of fun, but it was also difficult in part because there were just so many cool new things that were introduced.
That's very true. And it was also a lot of fun because, okay, if we're in this industry, we all have our ideas and opinions, and we're more than happy to express them. So I really enjoyed how we really had to get down to it and occasionally lock horns over what were the best products and why.
Mm-hmm. And my favorites would have been Wiretap Studio, which may be used to record the next podcast for us, MacBook Air, the AW1 from Audio Engine, and Bento.
Oh, man. See, that's all really good stuff, too.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
there's not a bad thing in the mix. And, you know, and with a mix like this, how do you pick your favorite?
Yeah. You know, reading through the comments, a lot of folks simply didn't understand that these awards were being given out to products that are new to Macworld. Not necessarily products that were newly announced at this Macworld. Basically, they were announced sometime in the last year and were shown for the first time at this Macworld.
Right, right. And, yeah, so some of these products people have been using for a while, you know, like PDF Pen Pro 3, mm-hmm. and Logic Studio. Mm-hmm. Others, like Phone to Phone, it had been out for, what, like a week or so?
Yeah.
And others, like the MacBook Air and Photoshop Elements 6, hadn't even been out yet.
Yeah, and AW1 was announced. And the AW1, by the way, is basically a way for you to connect an audio source to a pair of speakers wirelessly. It's cool
and
stuff.
It's cool. No latency. It's really cool.
It is cool. my point being that that was officially announced at CES the week before.
Right. And,
but that,
and
that's not what we're doing. What we're doing is we're looking at products that were new to the Mac world, new to Macworld.
There you go. There you go. Now, I noticed one of our readers actually questioned how we were able to choose Photoshop Elements 6 without the product even shipping yet. And so to answer that question, keep in mind I'm also heavily involved in the graphic design community, and when I'm not wearing my Mac Observer hat, I'm wearing a hat for other publications that are involved in that end of the world. So, yes, I actually did get to see this before it came out at Macworld, so I knew what was coming down the pipe. So we didn't have to choose that one based on Adobe saying, hey, look at the cool features that might be there. This is based on me sitting down and looking at the product and going, holy crap, Adobe totally got it right.
Right. All right. And with that, let's move on to listener comments.
I think that sounds like a great idea.
And that sound means it's time for listener comments. And a cough.
And a cough.
Andrew DeFranco wrote, hey, Roundup dudes. That's you and me, Jeff.
Oh, okay.
One thing late in the keynote had me interested. It was the first 2 weeks, 50 more gig. He's talking about where Steve Jobs said, look at all these things that we've done. And that's just in the first 2 weeks of 2008. There's 50 more weeks to come.
Oh, that's right.
Yep. And Andrew says, I'm wondering if this isn't an acknowledgement that Apple will have to deviate some from its air of secrecy and big announcement model that it's been teasing the media with for so many years. Will there be more periodic announcements from Apple with less say for the Macworld keynote? No.
You know, I don't think that Apple is going to have to deviate, or excuse me, I don't think Apple will deviate from its secrecy. I think Apple was, and Steve Jobs in specific, were being the biggest teases they possibly could.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's right about one thing. There are going to be more announcements throughout the world, throughout the year, simply because Apple's business is growing in so
right.
many directions.
Right, so, and Apple announces products throughout the year.
Yeah, and they're going to have to continue to spread those out throughout the year like they have with media events every 2-3 months.
Right, and keep in mind.
And the WWDC, I mean.
Right, and keep in mind, there were things that we didn't see happen at Macworld, like a revision to the MacBook Pro, new display.
The Mac Pros that were actually updated during CES.
Right, right. Yeah, so the Mac Pro came out the week before Macworld. We didn't get a new MacBook Pro at Macworld. And we fairly recently had a MacBook update. So we know that we probably have MacBook Pro updates in the near future. Odds are we're going to have, hopefully, new displays with LED backlighting before the end of the year.
Where the heck are those?
Well, they were at the Samsung booth this year.
Yeah, Samsung and NEC.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so, but where is my cinema display with LED backlighting?
I would love to have one of those. You know, my cinema display is CFC, and I would love to have it be LED, but apparently not this week.
So, long and the short, Mr. DeFranco, you make some very good points here. Apple's going to be spreading things out more throughout the year simply because they've just got so much going on. But I don't think that the company is going to be deviating any from its secrecy. Steve is all about the control, and I don't see that changing.
I'm totally with you on that one, Brian.
Yep. But we very much appreciate the comment. And he, by the way, his PS was, sorry, this was a little beyond the likes of Jobs, because he's referring to our succinctness as next to Steveliness. But that's okay. We loved your letter. It was a great one.
It was. So thank you for sending that in. Mm-hmm. And do we have any more?
Not for this week, at least not that we should spend any more talking about, because we're already long.
All right.
And I'm still sick.
and my voice is starting to go. So that's my cue to give us our comments tagline, which is, if you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. And I think we timed this just right. My voice is almost gone.
And I'm Brian Chaffin. Thank you very much for tuning in. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. And I forget what else I'm supposed to say.
Oh, the other part is our bandwidth is provided by CashFly.
Thanks, CashFly.
Boom. Recorded for TMO and IPO, and that's all for this week. That's the other part you're supposed to say. And now this is where I say, stay subscribed.
We'll see you next week at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com.